Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
There you go. Next hour, we'll do it at 3:55, so you'll get those 5 minutes back.
There you go. Fair enough. We're costing you time here. Yeah. We'll buy it back from you.
No, basically, they weren't trying to buy favor with the NFL. They were the NHL. What they were trying to do was make it look like John Davidson and Jeff Gordon got fired for authoring a letter that they didn't author.
Okay. So let's get back to the raw nature of hockey. Would the statement... Had the New York Knicks issued the following statement?
The Rangers.
Thank you very much.
Sorry, I didn't mean to correct you. But.
No, you're right too. Let's get this. You get the league right, I'll get the team right, and we'll sound like professionals together. The New York Rangers, had they just issued a statement saying, "We highly suggest Tom Wilson be a healthy scratch tonight. If not, his blood flows on the ice of Madison Square Garden." Alert, that would have gone better, right?
Alert, yeah.
Hold on. Alert, we have the no-hitter. It happened. Alert, it's not perfect, but it is a no-no.
Yep.
How good that they played 9 innings and it officially counts, says Madison Bumgarner.
It does feel good, doesn't it?
It does feel good.
By the way, the bag alert thing.
Yeah.
Can we put a bullet in that head?
No. I think it's great.
Oh, it's awful.
How obnoxious.
It's on TV 30 times a day. I'm literally getting Stockholm syndrome from it.
Well, now we want to play it even more. Remember, Ray.
Well, then I could take tomorrow and Friday off. I've got a flu coming on.
Oh. Look, I...
Okay, never. We're digressing.
So here's the thing, though. Our breaking news sounder is so bad, I actually think that that's better than a breaking news sounder.
I think the breaking news sounder should just be Lucas yelling, "Shut up, something happened."
We can work on that. We can absolutely produce that piece of audio before...
No, we don't have to produce it. He can actually emit it from his very own face.
Ray, that'll work if you find us a sponsor for that one.
I'm not working in ad sales.
Well, it was your idea.
I don't work in ad sales. I gave you the idea. Now somebody else gets to pitch it.
Here's the thing.
We have a whole army of pocket protectors downstairs
who
can do this.
The minute Ray finds out that everything he takes off the table, he has to replace with something himself, he'll stop taking things off the table.
I just did. I just gave you the replacement, and everybody agrees it's a great idea.
Okay. Well, I mean, how about that?
Back to the statement.
Yes.
The reason why he... I don't normally do this with young people. I wish you both a very short and painful life.
Back to the statement.
Yeah. The statement is basically encouraging a felony. I think you can go to jail for that one.
Okay. So if you can't take it off the ice in that way,
yeah.
What if they had never issued a statement, and the minute Wilson hit the ice, five guys dropped the gloves and beat him senseless?
Well, you would have your standard bench-emptying brawl.
Good times.
It would mean that you'd get guys suspended.
Sure enough.
And even though they're not going to make the playoffs, that comes with a fine, and guess whose pocket that comes out of.
But it's only $5,000. It's only $5,000.
It's only $5,000 to a player. You can fine a team any amount of money. The traditional way that teams used to handle this was... If something happened in a game that didn't get addressed in that game, in the next game, the aggrieved team would bring up four or five guys from the minor leagues, all of whom...
The Hanson brothers.
Yeah. Only worse. You know, Ogie Oglethorpe times four.
Oglethorpe?
The problem is, the minor leagues aren't working this year. So they don't have those guys ready and in punching form.
Oh.
So, you know, it's one of those happy circumstances where the only people who are going to be able to get revenge on Tom Wilson are the guys on the ice. And frankly, Tom Wilson is tougher than all of them. So they might have to file this away for next year.
At the same time, didn't the NHL just basically sign off as sucker punch your heart's desires at the bottom of any scrum or pile? It'll be a $5,000 fine, circumstances or consequences be damned.
Well, what they did was they blamed the players for it by making it clear that this was the maximum allowable fine due to the CBA. They basically said, we want you to blame the players for not taking their own safety into account. So it was politics in the end.
How much credibility do the Rangers lose in old school hockey circles just by issuing this statement? Like, it's a good thing Don Cherry's no longer on the air, right? Like
for a lot of reasons, but that would be one of them. No, I think in terms of that, it depends on what they do tonight. One of my guilty pleasures is when something goofy happens in hockey, I listen to NHL radio the next day. Because they have a lot of old school guys. And even though they're paid by the league, their old school leaks out. And the general tone was, well, the Rangers better do something Wednesday night.
Right.
They didn't say what it was because they're employees. But they made it sort of clear that somebody needs to basically try to beat up Tom Wilson if they can.
Yeah.
And if they have access to somebody, then you'll see it quickly.
The code red has been issued.
And you'll find out how serious the Capitals are in engaging if they put Wilson on the ice right away.
Right. Right.
Because he's not a first-line guy.
If he gets an early shift, that's daring you. Like, that's basically sticking out your chin and saying, you won't hit it.
Yeah. So go ahead. We'd like you to hit it.
See, this is the stuff that I do love about hockey. This is the stuff that hockey needs to figure out how to package and sell. Because this is the stuff that works.
Well, they have done that, and it does work. But the problem is they have been confronted, as the NFL was, with a spate of serious sort of concussion issues, many of them incurred by guys who do just that, which is be the enforcer. John Branch wrote a book about Derek Bougard, who was an enforcer in Minnesota and a couple of other teams.
Yeah.
And it was a great book. But there's a significant price to be paid for being that guy. And fewer guys are willing to trade in 40 years of brain damage for a couple extra shifts against Columbus.
Kalen Kaler wrote a really interesting article for The Defector, which is a website that Ray is a part of as well. She was all over the fact that, hey, if there used to be, what, like 1,200 draft-eligible players for football, there were about 400 this year, almost a third?
No, it was like 700 as opposed to like 2,000.
Oh, okay. So, I mean,
it's significant nonetheless.
A significant smaller talent pool entered this year's draft. What can we garner from that? What did that do to make harder or easier evaluations of players? And obviously, will the 49ers win a Super Bowl? She'll have the answer to that and a few things about Deshaun Watson, because that's another story that she's been working on. And she's joining us next here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky or on 95.7 The Game. You miss anything we do, check it all out on the Odyssey.com app. We're brought to you by Network Capital Funding.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Good to have you here, Damon Ratto and Kolsky indeed, but no Kolsky with us today. He is home with his brand new baby daughter. Made that announcement.
Is he home
today,
or is he still at the hospital?
No, I believe they're all home. Happy, happy.
What do you get, 4 hours and then they kick you out?
Bouncing babies. Yeah, basically, you
That's
get a night.
Brutal.
You get a night and you got to go. That's the way it is when it's a healthy little baby girl, which the Kolskys are very, very happy with, and we're very, very happy indeed.
How is that different than a transient hotel?
Hey, think about it. We're all just passing through the hospital. You come in, you go out. That's the way it works, right?
Well, then don't even take a cab anymore. Just leave the car running.
No, totally.
You'll be out in an hour.
You're right about that. You should leave the meter running. We have a really good show for you today. A little bit later on, we're going to be talking some MLB with Tim Kirkjian, Anthony Slater on the Warriors and their disappointing loss last night. But now, in the name of something a little different, we thought it was time to say hello to Kaylin Kaler of The Defector. She wrote a really interesting article, a really, really interesting article about the fact that, well, basically we have fewer players entering the player pool of drafted players in the NFL draft. And she's also working on a story about Deshaun Watson. And Ray says, we should get her on. And I said, that sounds like a great idea to me. Kaylin Kaler of The Defector joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Thank you so much. How are you?
Guys.
Hello. Do we have you?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, there she is. We do have you, Kaylin. Yeah. Thank you very, very much for joining us today. Obviously, in some capacity, you work with Ray Ratto. So do I. So, you know, we carry the same cross in life. We both know what burden this really is. But thank you for joining us. And my question about your article concerning how many guys were eligible to be drafted in the first place, as you researched your article, did this cause or correlate GMs to have an easier or more difficult evaluation process?
Yeah, I think that's a question a lot of people are asking, but I'm not sure it necessarily correlated in that way, because they still had the same amount of, you know, quote unquote, draftable players. It was just the depth of those players is less than in a normal year. So you're still talking about pretty much the same size of players that you're actually going to spend a draft pick on. But I do think it was hard for some teams in terms of just figuring out, one, who was in this draft class and who was planning to go back to school. I know that caused a ton of confusion and a ton of extra work for scouts out there, you know, trying to figure out who in their region was actually available to be drafted. That became a little bit difficult in the process. And then getting the medicals. The medical part of it, too, became a lot harder because the combine, the centralized location where you can get controlled medical results for all of these guys in one place, that did not happen this year. And for the smaller school players, you really had to, you know, piece together their medical history in a way that was much harder this year.
Given that, and let's just do the raw numbers, and you cited as of April 7th, which is essentially a month ago, and about 3 weeks before the draft, that normally there are about 1,900 players who would contact an agent because they had sort of aspirations about being involved in the draft. And this year it was 650. Does that mean that next year the draft class is going to be, you know, 3,500? I mean, are there that many people who have basically just deferred the dream, and then next year it's going to be a buyer's market like never before?
Yeah, I think it is definitely going to be a bloated and mobbed draft class for sure, because all those guys who decided to go back to school, a lot of them were seniors. So that means that they are on their, you know, final year of eligibility. They can't decide to go back for a sixth year unless, you know, something medically happens to them this year. But for the majority of those guys, yeah, they're going to have to come out in the next year's draft class. And then you still have the juniors who will come out early, and then you have the regular seniors. So one scout kind of described to me that there are going to be sort of three classes in one next year. You know, the early, the guys who declare early, like you would see in any normal year, the actual seniors, and then the super, super seniors who had that extra year of eligibility. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a lot bigger of a draft class. And, you know, I heard a lot of teams say that they wanted to try to get more picks in next year's draft because of that.
So with a bloated draft class on its way for next year, does the NFL go out of its way to capitalize on that by, you know, saying, hey, we got another game now. We're playing 17 games. We're going to add another round to the draft, two rounds to the draft. Who would say no to that?
That's interesting. I don't know if they would do that. I kind of doubt it. I don't know. It seems like a big change for them to make just for 1 year and then to go back to seven rounds the next year. Or maybe they keep it forever because there are 17 games and, you know, there's going to be maybe expanded practice squads. Or they already expanded the practice squads last year. I don't know. It's an interesting question for sure. And the draft has been seven rounds since 1993. So it's been seven rounds for quite a while now. We haven't seen a change. So that's an interesting question, but I don't know. I don't really see that happening, but it definitely could be a result of this.
Hey, every now and then I catch a car I'm chasing. So I'm glad I got an interesting yeah. question in there today.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing about the draft, and then we can move on to Deshaun Watson if everybody agrees, is that do you think that the smaller pool caused an effect in players that were actually drafted and where they were drafted this year, or is that largely undetectable?
I think that it did. I mean, I haven't really done an analysis of looking at, where guys were picked, and it's so hard to tell because every team is going to have a different grade on a different player. So to say someone was overdrafted or underdrafted is always kind of a stretch because it's really something you can't really prove it. I do think it did have some kind of effect because actually one of the players I wrote about in that story, Kenne Nwangwu, he was a Iowa State running back who was a career backup. And I was like, yeah, in a normal year, this is the type of player who probably wouldn't get drafted. He actually went in the fourth round, you guys. So that was shocking to me because I thought he would go in like the sixth round, you know, a high sixth round pick maybe. But he actually went in the fourth round. So just using him as an example, like it's possible that, you know, he really benefited from this because he went in the fourth round, which really surprised me.
Here's what we do know. We won't know a single thing about a single player draft until 2-3 years from now, and then we can give our grades. We love to rush to instant analysis of things that are, you know, thoroughly unknowable. And that brings us to our next topic with Kaylin Kaler of The Defector. She is also working on a story about Deshaun Watson, who, like 3 weeks ago, was part of every single sportscast, part of every podcast, broadcast, and, you know, just about every story in the NFL was linked to him in one way, shape, or form. And then all of a sudden, it totally fell off the radar, which means it went from being a public topic to a private discussion among lawyers who got money on the table and settlements are being reached, which means people are keeping their mouth shut when this thing was so in the wind early on. What's the latest, and is this about to go away? Or is this about to come into focus again that is a point of no return for Deshaun?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, right now, you're right. It has gone quiet, and that's because the two sides are doing whatever they're doing behind closed doors. The last thing that happened, which was almost 2 weeks ago now, the judge who was hearing all of the cases had a very nice get your shit in order type of meeting with them and was like, stop filing things haphazardly. Like, we need one case file. You guys need to work together. She was very much like, you know, a mom, like talking to two toddlers, which were the lawyers on each side of this. So since then, it's been pretty quiet. And I think, I don't know. I mean, there are five women allegedly. It's still kind of unconfirmed by the Houston Police Department, but they did confirm that there are two criminal investigations ongoing regarding Deshaun Watson and concerning a sexual assault. So we do know that the police, there are two criminal investigations there, and we think that there are actually five because the Washington Post then reported that there were three more women who went to the police about Deshaun. So and on that end, I mean, there is potential for this to be something criminal, something involving the police, and we'll see where that goes. But as far as the, legal issue between the two lawyers, as far as we know, everything we've heard from Deshaun's side so far is that he's going to fight this in court, and that was every intention. So I do think this will get to, you know, the discovery phase where, you know, we'll see who's everybody's cards on the table. And then Watson's side is going to have to decide if they're going to continue to fight it, if they think they can win this case, or if they're going to settle. They've already turned down, you know, several attempts from the plaintiffs represented by Tony Busby to settle. So as far as we know, I mean, their intention with Watson's side is to continue to fight this.
Could we then infer from their interest in fighting this that he is essentially not a quarterback in 2021? Because, yeah. I mean, whether or not, you know, the Texans want to play him or not, or whether or not somebody else wants to trade him or not, there's still court dates jumping up and down on his chest from now till Christmas.
Yep.
So what is the general feeling about whether or not he's going to want to try to play with all this hanging over his head and with all that he's put over his head?
So I don't see him playing in 2021. I think it's just a matter of time until he's placed on the commissioner's exempt list. I'm not exactly sure why he hasn't been yet, or, you know, what the status of his NFL investigation is. All we know officially is that the NFL has opened an investigation regarding these allegations. So we do know that the NFL is looking into this, although, you know, we don't know the particulars of that, and we don't know if he will be placed on the commissioner's exempt list or not. And I haven't really done a ton of reporting yet on the NFL angle of this, but I don't see a way that he's going to be able to play this season, because I don't see a way that this, I don't see a way that his legal disputes are wrapped up by then. And, you know, with the unknown status of what's going on with these criminal investigations by the Houston Police Department, that just adds another layer to this. And I think what we saw in the draft with the Texans' first draft choice, which was in the second round, they picked a quarterback. And I think that really telegrams things we already knew. I mean, they are preparing to move on without him. They have Tyrod Taylor. I think he'll be their starter this year. And I think, you know, that second round draft choice quarterback is maybe something they're going to think about for the long term future. And I do think, like, Deshaun's career is not over, you know, unless he ends up in prison. I do think that someone is going to trade for him, or the Texans will release him and someone will sign him at some point down the road. But I don't really see him playing this coming season.
Kalen Kaler of The Defector, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate you stopping on by. Thank you very much. And again, thank you for working with Ray Ratto, too. That is God's work.
Thanks. I love it.
Thank you very, very much to Kalen Kaler. Deshaun Watson is in a really interesting place, man. And look, Ray, I don't know. She said that there are some criminal investigations that are going on. Unless you got new criminal charges, I don't know if the NFL is going to take a talent like him and flush him away because he made some masseuses uncomfortable. And that there might be zero nobility to that, but we are suspect enough of this league to know that there is a certain amount of talent that allows you to get away with making a lot of people uncomfortable in your life, and Deshaun has that level of talent.
Yeah, well, I mean, having read what she's written about the cases that are already out there, it's more than making them uncomfortable. I mean, it's significantly more serious than that, which is why the fact that the police have been involved and have stayed involved in a city where football players get a pass under any circumstances indicates to me that there's a lot more fire than there is smoke here.
So,
and beyond that, the fact that it hasn't gone away, which is the one thing I thought would happen when I was bloviating on like a month ago saying, oh, some NFL team will sign him, it won't matter. I now am not sure, at least in the short term, because this isn't going away. And frankly, it shouldn't, based on at least the reporting that's been done by Kalen and other people.
So I got to be totally honest that I sort of thought it was going away only because out of sight, out of mind. And what was an incredibly public conversation between the lawyers involved went to, you know, far away from the court of public opinion into a negotiation, which I thought meant we're getting closer to settling, which means we're getting closer to making it all go away for the right price. If you're telling me that the reason why everybody is piped down is because this went from civil to criminal, well, that would be another reason why people got really tight-lipped too. So if that's what's going on here.
Well, and the judge, and Kalen referred to it when she was talking to us, the judge basically said, show me something. I'm involved now. And when judges show an interest like that, that means the impetus to settle diminishes, it seems to me, because judges tend to want to make things go away because their dockets are so loaded. But on something like this, when they say, okay, bring me what you want, you know, let's go. I mean, that's an indication to me that this is going to some sort of trial and that, you know, neither side is ready to settle anything yet. And if it's a game of chicken, well, the season starts in 3 months.
All right. Well, hold on tight. Bumpy ride.
4 months, actually. I lied to you.
Yeah. Bumpy ride looks like it's coming. Aaron Rodgers, since we're talking quarterbacks in other cities, I guess this feels like the natural place to put him in today's show, because this thing with Aaron Rodgers, Ray, it's getting a touch nastier than I thought it would. And like, here's how I think it's really going to work out. It's nasty. It's nasty now. You're going to hear more jokes. You're going to hear more cheap shots. You're going to hear more things that he doesn't like. And then he reports to camp. And then we're going to get the reports of it all got smoothed out. And then Green Bay is going to go 13-4. And then they're going to lose in the NFC title game. And then we're going to do this again next year, too. Like, doesn't it feel like that's where we are in Aaron Rodgers' career?
It seems like that. But if the report from Mike Garofalo is true, that he was telling potential free agents the Packers might be interested in, that he's essentially, before you make any decisions, I'm probably not going to be there. I mean, that's as overt an act as you can make to tell people, don't come to Green Bay. And that ratchets up.
Can a guy be charged with tampering against his own team?
No, but it's a hell of a question. The thing that I can't get around, though, and the thing that I'm still unclear about is why, if this was as bad as it was, or as bad as everybody is saying is, why did the Rodgers side wait until draft morning to say, hey, he wants a trade, and these are the three places he wants to go? Because that made it seem more like posturing. And if this is just layering posturing on top of other posturing, well, eventually the Jenga tower collapses. And when it collapses, who ends up weaker in that? Probably Rodgers. So if this is about saving face, he's got to figure out a way to go or quit. If it's about, you know, getting a better deal, I think those negotiations are going to be particularly acrimonious. And if you have a quarterback, even one as good as him, whose teammates look at him and go, are you all in this week or not? You know, I think that becomes a whole different dynamic that makes this thing end ugly on the field, which is the thing I think both sides would like to avoid. That said, you wanted to go to the 49ers. The 49ers took a quarterback. They're out of the they're not out of the Rodgers market. Denver, not interested, apparently. They had a chance to draft a quarterback, didn't bother. And then their talks with Green Bay ended in about a minute. That doesn't leave many people.
The Raiders got mentioned on his wish list, but how can you say I'm trying to win and make me a Raider in the same sentence?
Because I don't know that it's all about winning. I think it might at this point be just about screwing the Packers. And the advantage of the Raiders is that they're in Las Vegas now, not Oakland. Because in Las Vegas, there's show business possibilities. You know, Merv Griffin could move Jeopardy to Vegas in a minute if they wanted to hire him. You know, or Vegas is also a very short flight away from L.A. if he still wants to do that. And it sounds like he does. I don't think that's just a lark. So
I agree with you. I think he does want to be.
That's the Raider logic.
I think he
Because is. Otherwise, you're going, yeah, I want to play for John Gruden. That's the sound of a madman talking.
I think he either wants to be back on the West Coast or Vegas is close enough to the West Coast to count for West Coast. But yeah. he's a private plane away from Burbank anytime he needs to be. Like,
yeah,
it's really – he can do that from Green Bay as well, and it's just a few more bags of peanuts.
It's more just a few more bags of peanuts. It's even a private jet, that's still 5 hours.
Yeah, sure. You got an iPad. You can watch a movie.
Yeah, but he'll be a little tired when he comes back when it comes time to use the iPad to study plays.
Well, here's the thing. Does he want to do it anymore? That's the question. Because if he does, if you're the Green Bay Packers, you only want him to do it for you. There's no way the Green Bay Packers are moving on from Aaron Rodgers, because Aaron Rodgers like might have called, you know, Gutekraus, making fun of him using the Jerry Krause reference. Like, Aaron wanting to host a game show, making fun of their general manager and being upset that a player got cut, is still 100 miles away from him not being a Green Bay Packer.
Yeah, but it's what's interesting, though, is the way that, you know, the muddies keep getting watered, almost certainly from the Rodgers side, as though they're trying to make the Packers so uncomfortable with their decision to keep him that they can no longer keep him. And I don't think they're at that stage yet, because the Packers have put up with this before. Not to this extent, but they've had these battles before and fired Mike McCarthy as a result of it.
I'm telling you, man, you don't want to get into this situation where you're having like a who's I dare you to be more miserable contest with your starting quarterback who's a first ballot Hall of Famer. But if I'm the Green Bay Packers, I am betting on Aaron Rodgers. I'm calling his bluff every single time, Ray. This guy's got very few precious years left, and I think he realizes that walking away now with just one Super Bowl is the wrong way to frame that career. And if I'm the Packers, I'm playing a huge game of chicken with this guy. I don't see him walking away from the game of football comfortably now, no matter what he says, no matter what game show he gets offered.
Yeah, but Calvin Johnson did it, and he's still a hero in Detroit, and the Lions are still enemies.
Yeah, but the Lions are the biggest group of losers that when you want to compare them to the history of the Green Bay Packers, there's nothing to even talk about. I mean,
I understand
both
that,
in the NFL,
but it's not such a lopsided game as it seems. What the Packers ought to do if they're worried about their place in the public image fight is say, we're ready to open negotiations on a new deal. Well, you're not making just $14 million anymore. We're willing to blow up our cap for you. Are you going to come and play now? Because the only other thing they can offer is a place in the draft room. And it's clear they don't want to give him that. And if you can't call his bluff with money, you can at least tell Packer fans, if he decides he's not going to play again, you just go, we offered him everything we could reasonably offer him, and he still walked.
Text line says, Damon, how do you and Ray still have a job? Gruden is a better coach than Kyle. Check out his quarterback to theirs. Okay, the amount of stupid that had to go into that and send it to us is something that we're going to break down. And we're not going to do it using our words. We're going to use Jim Trotter's to explain how absolutely not in Kyle Shanahan's league is the house that John Gruden lives in. The Raiders are worse now than the day that they hired him. Period and end of story. We're back with that in just a moment. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game. Again, you tug on Superman's cape, you're going to get punched in the face. That's what's happening.
You're so Tom Wilson.
I really am Tom Wilson. Thank you very much. Blood flows red on the ice tonight at the Garden. Damon Ratto and Kolsky brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking. No compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Here it is. It's already started. Already started. Damon, why are you such a Raider hater? Why are you such a Raider hater? Why you? You're on crack, Damon. Why are you such a Raider hater? You got one winning season in 18 years. Okay? I mean, that's who you are. You got one winning season in 18 years. And the guy that you brought in to be the savior is making the team and the franchise worse. All you got going for you is a new zip code and a beautiful new stadium and a great new headquarters. I was just in Henderson, Nevada not too long ago. The Raiders, they absolutely have greener pasture in terms of facility now than they did in the Bay. Congratulations to Mark Davis. He hired the wrong coach, and you're going in the wrong direction. And your general manager doesn't make a single move that is related to reality or connected one to another. That's not my opinion either. These are observable facts that can be looked up and researched by the biggest card-carrying Raider fan in the world. Period. End of story. I mean, there's nothing to defend. Since John Gruden got hired, you're 19-29 with second, third, and fourth place finishes in 4 years, respectively. You're going backwards in your own division.
I think that as a coach, he's still viable.
Offensively, correct. He's
but
a good
as a general manager and runner of a football operation, it has not been good, and it has not been good since they won the Super Bowl in Tampa, his first year there. They're 64. He's 64-80 since then. But the problem, I think, is not him as a coach. It's him as a general manager. And yes, Mike Mayock has the title, but he is not drafting independent of John Gruden. John Gruden runs that franchise the way Kyle Shanahan runs the 49ers. He's where everything stops. And that's where I think most observers have the problem. It's that the Raiders continue to spin their wheels, make draft choices that don't pan out, you know, make risky free agent signings that fizzle. I mean, that's where the hole is. If you had a general manager who could tell John Gruden how things were going to be done and they could figure out a way to work together, you could make the case that the Raiders are on the rise. But with John Gruden calling the most significant shots and being the guy who directs every decision, that's where you have a 64-80 record. And that's why you're 19-29 since he got back to Oakland / Las Vegas.
There are player personnel decisions which don't work out. You want to go to the trading of Khalil Mack? The options that gave you and how that those options were wasted? You're drafting guys that are reaches and then play like reaches. Henry Ruggs was the first receiver taken. He had an absolute yawn of a season last year. Well, he was hurt. Celine Farrell. You going to go ahead and redraft that guy?
Clellan.
Celine is what I said it. I said it.
Oh, you meant that?
Yes.
Well, that's an interesting way to go.
Yeah. Celine. He doesn't do nothing. Alex Leatherwood. You just reached with a guy you probably could have had in the second round. And you replaced an offensive line that actually was the one thing that worked well. I mean, nothing makes sense. The decision made today is not connected to the decision made tomorrow. That happens time and time again. And boys, girls, Raiders fans of all ages, these are not my words. These are the words of Jim Trotter. This is not Damon Bruce being a Raider hater. This is people who cover the league looking at your franchise and going, hey, new town, same old Raiders. And that's what you are. Actually, it's actually worse. It's getting worse, not better. But what about that top 10 offense, Damon? Yeah, watch John Gruden fall out of love with Carr somehow, some way this year. Didn't happen last year. Watch it happen this year. He's two bad games away from looking for his replacement. We all know that.
But the other thing we know, and this is where you can look at Gruden as a coach and say, this is inadequate, is the 31st or 32nd ranked defense. Defense has been an abomination. So much so that Derek Carr, who had a phenomenal year last year.
Very good year.
And Josh Jacobs, who was a top 10 running back in this league. And you know, Darren Waller, who's probably one of the two or three best tight ends in football. He scored points, but they gave them up at a frightening rate. And until that gets fixed, it doesn't matter what he does with the offense. It's defending John Gruden is fine if you want to do that. But you have to first define what his actual job is, and that is running the entire football operation. Well, if the football operation has basically stagnated for the last 3 years, the way it stagnated for most of the 15 before it, the thing you can say about Gruden in his time with the Raiders is he picked justifiable fights with Al Davis to the point where he basically, you know, got himself traded, which is a hell of a thing. You know, you don't get fired, you get traded. I mean, and people defended that because they liked the fact that somebody would tell Al Davis no. But the problem is now nobody's telling him no. And the thing that they need more than anything else is either Mike Mayock to be given the power to tell him no or somebody else to do it.
Right. If you're the smartest guy in the room, eventually your decisions have to add up to prove that you're the smartest guy in the room. And these decisions are not adding up to prove that. And you can say, well, it's Mike Mayock, but now you're picking and choosing from the reality you want to participate in. John Gruden can't be responsible for all that is good, and Mike Mayock be the reason why all is bad. Because Gruden is completely in charge. From Jim Trotter's article on NFL.com, It's hard to have faith that the Raiders will turn things around in the near future. They appear unwilling to learn from past mistakes. Fact is, no team has been worse at navigating free agency the last few years, which is further compounded when Las Vegas failed to land impact players in the draft. 2 years ago, the Raiders made a huge splash by signing veterans Trent Brown, Terrell Williams, and LaMarcus Joyner. Open in free agency. They're all signed. The three were expected to be foundational players, but in fact, none lasted more than two seasons with the team. Worse, they walked away with just under $85 million in cash paid combined, which is financial malfeasance. Last season's offense wasn't much better as the Raiders signed, last offseason wasn't much better as the Raiders signed linebacker Corey Littleton for $35 million, pass rusher Carl Nassib for $25 million, deals totaling $60 million. They gave defensive tackle Malik Collins $6 million, and more strangely awarded a one-year $4 million deal to tight end Jason Witten, who at 38 is so far past his prime he can't even see it in the rearview mirror anymore. Responsibilities for these decisions rest with Mark Davis, since he's the person who signed Gruden to a 10-year contract. And again, John Gruden, since signing with the team, second time around, is 19-29 over his past three seasons. And whatever offense, getting better is your argument to why you should believe more in the Raiders. The defense is getting worse. And I'm going to tell you right now, that part of the solution they're looking to enact this year in Las Vegas is Solomon Thomas. Solomon Thomas is not there to provide solutions for an aching defense. I know that much.
We're beating the same hamster here, but the problem is player selection. And until they start getting a lot better at drafting and a lot less defensive about the people they draft, they're going to be stuck in the same place. Because for whatever reason, John Gruden has a set of beliefs about what football is that either isn't translating to the guys he signs, or worse, is translating to the guys he signs. Because they're not getting much accomplished for all their bluster and posturing. You know, there is a point at which, you know, doing it our way has to come with results. And again, credit for Waller, credit for Jacobs. But after that, it's been a pretty thin herd. And at some point, you have to apply the standards to him that you apply to Shanahan, who still, even with a Super Bowl appearance on his resume, has a losing record. First 2 years, you can allow him freedom because he was taking a terrible situation. And you could do that for Gruden, too. But he's now entering year four, and the allowable stuff in the rearview mirror is no longer in sight. Now it's just what's ahead.
Anyone who's a solution today can become the reason why it's not working tomorrow. Remember Paul Gunther? Paul Gunther gets hired in